Truth is we don't have any power anymore. We live inside of an actual concentration camp right now. This whole place is designed to make us spiritually sick and suffer so that, like, we become easy to exploit and steal and abuse.
Either one of these extremes that we pick between, we're going to get this surveillance, police state, social credit score system.
The incredible instance of the World Cup in the U.S., where you have all of these, mainly like Europeans, but like coming here and being like, holy shit, wait a minute. Maybe everything I've been told about America isn't true. Like, no shit. Maybe there's a reason that all of your highest achieving people have been trying to come here.
The Euros have this totally wrong perception of us that, like, they think that we're all, like, I don't know, like, we got guns all the time and stuff. And it's like, I don't know where they get this idea. It doesn't make sense to me.
AI is communism. Like, I now have a methodology of cooling that I can steal any and all knowledge in the human corpus today. Bitcoin's the end of the AI story because, like, we figured out how to secure information that's extremely valuable. To me, when I really understood that, like, that was the fundamental rescue from nihilism.
This is a spiritual battle between good and evil. When you fear God, you only have to fear one thing. But when you don't fear God, you have to fear everything.
Obviously, I haven't been around as long as you guys. You guys have seen more ups and downs of this. But infighting seems to follow price. Like, we create a lot of villains, I think, when number no go up. And then when number do go up, everyone's all hunky-dory. And I don't know. It's, I guess we humans are like, we are emotional creatures at the end of the day.
It's so, you know, in fact, it's become a signal, I think, many people who've been in for a long time, we look for that infighting as a signal for, like, is this, are we getting near a bottom? Is it getting close? Usually bottoms are near when people are like, they finally drop the, you know, pretensions and they're just like, I don't fucking like this guy. Fuck him. You know? And then you're like, oh, interesting. We might be getting close to a bottom. I don't know. You know, it's like you kind of use it as a way to feel it out. But yeah, I mean, it's like, I think it's very, you know, it's just very difficult. Like, it's, hodling is very difficult and it hurts. It's painful. You know what I mean? Like, we lost $68,000 a coin. Okay. And fucking run it back 5 years. We were I was drinking champagne to $68,000 a coin. I felt like I was untouchable. I felt like I could do no wrong. I felt like I farted fucking rainbows, dude. Like, it was like amazing, you know? And now we are down that much per coin and it's like, fuck. The nominal starts to really, you know, this is like, I've said this many times, but like hodling actually gets harder as you go. It doesn't get easier. People think it gets easier.
Yeah, it's kind of weird.
You're richer. No, it gets harder because the sums of money that you're losing on paper are, you know, more than you could ever gain in a lifetime, right? Like you can't work your way back into gaining this money. And it just went away and you're like, fuck, what am I going to do? And you start to your identity gets wrapped up in it, you know, because it's so hard during the bear market, during the bear cycles, you know, you're like, I'm a loser. I'm an idiot. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe my fucking aunt is right. She's a bitch. Fuck her. But maybe she's right. No. And like, fuck, man. What if I'm going to lose all my money, dude? Shit. And then the bull market comes around and you're like, oh, no, dude. I'm right, dude. I'm right. Everyone else is wrong. Fuck you, Aunt Joan, bitch. Fuck you. Right? And then you get you get wrapped up in the identity of being the smart right guy. And then you get that for about a year. And then it's like, back to being wrong again. And then just whipsawing back and forth between the two things over and over again.
Do you have an Aunt Joan that's going to listen to this and be like, what's he saying? No, why would he say that?
But there are a bunch of boomer women in the Midwest who don't enjoy my presence at family gatherings anymore. Let's say that. None of their names are Joan, though.
I mean, are there Midwest boomer women that like you?
I don't know. Maybe some of the fans of Walker's show, but not anybody, you know, who's genetically related to me. Let's say that.
Yeah, that's fair.
Is it because you were right about things? Could that be why?
More of it is like COVID. To be serious, it's like COVID fallout. Okay. You know, like, yeah. Like, there was a lot of, you know, bullshit during that time. And then it was like, you need to apologize. And it was like, yeah, I don't think I will, though. So here we are.
What if I just didn't? What if I just didn't?
You need to apologize?
Yeah, you know. One thing that happened during COVID was I lost my I stopped extending politeness to people who didn't deserve politeness, and that was taken wrong by a lot of people, and I kind of felt like, good, because you don't deserve politeness when you're not being fucking polite. You're being fucking rude as shit, you know. I was telling this story in Austin the other day, but I was at COVID. It was during COVID. You remember they had like markings in the grocery store? They'd like it'd be like one way aisles in the grocery store.
Oh, God.
All these weird stickers on the floor, and it was like unclear where you stood and what was supposed, whatever. So I'm standing in the wrong place. I've got a cart full of food. There's probably $400, $500 worth of food in this cart, and it's like packed to the brim. And the guy comes up to me. He's just real shitty, and he's like, you know, sir, excuse you. They always do that thing. Excuse you, sir. Excuse you. You're in the wrong line, like that. And I was just like, okay, word. And I shoved the card at him, and I was like, here you go. And he was like, you don't want your items anymore, sir? Like, he realized he was going to have to put them all back. And I was like, nah, they're yours now, dude. See you later. And I was fucking just walked away. And so I started doing that more and more of like, I developed this technique where I just ignore people. Like in public, if you're like, sir, excuse you, behind the yellow line, I just go like this. Anyway,
what do they call that? They call that not that you're Gen Z, obviously we're all millennials, but they call that, there's like a term for that, like the Gen Z stare or
Gen
something
stare.
Like just,
yeah.
Like the, yeah,
I think maybe I did adopt the Gen Z stare. I'm honorary.
They've got some good things going for them in that regard, I think. Like, yeah. I think that they're, you know, like I have some hope actually, like for Gen Z.
But I've been very impressed by Gen Z lately, as of late.
Me too.
Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah. What impressive things have, I don't interact with them enough. Although there's a couple homies I hang out with that are pretty cool.
You know how millennials, we went through this like long period of unbrainwashing ourselves, and it probably took like 10 years. It probably was the last 10 years, like from 2016 to 2026, where we kind of like just, well, some of us, not all of, I mean, some people are still stuck in the brainwashing, but some of us like, we're like, yeah, a lot of that shit they told me was just not true. I think Gen Z is starting out at that place. And so when you talk to like a 22-year-old Gen Z guy who's like, nah, dog, it's fucking, that's bullshit, dog. Christ is king, motherfucker. You're just like, yeah, this guy is fucking, he's on it in a way that I was not, you know, 10 years ago or at his age, right? So I think that's the interesting thing about them.
I think they sampled the extremeness that sort of like is the normie narrative. And I think you hit on a good point there of that, like, I think those of us that are and would identify ourselves as Bitcoiners, like it, that was a process of de-brainwashing ourselves from fiat world. And then like that helped create an exposure of like, oh, like, is it just money? Or is it also like medicine? Is it also spirituality? Like, and you sort of realize like, oh, like this whole place is designed to make us spiritually sick and suffer. So that like we become easy to exploit and steal and abuse, you know, I'm like, it's one of the things of like, I'm always really shocked at the interesting of the dialogue of, like I was at a party the other weekend and a friend pointed out, they're like, this is really interesting. The conformity of diversity here. Like everyone's presenting this really diverse way of being, but it completely homogenized everybody in a way that like, there was no discernible difference between everybody. But in like, it's the same way of like peace and love and like, let's all love everybody all the time, no matter what and who they are. And it's like, it turns out that this actually deprives us of like any meaningful metric of like what love actually is. And I don't know, it's really sad to see how people lap up that dialogue. You know, like in my personal life, I've seen again and again that I'll get to a place with particular people of it's like, hey, like, let's question some stuff, you know, like and a lot of times it's their worldviews. Like I'm totally open to questioning mine too, but I find that the first response is deep offense. It's not like, that's different. Like, let's look at, it's like, how dare you? Like, how could you possibly have a worldview like that? And it's like, how could you not? You know, like these people literally had you inject yourself with an experimental medication under the guise that like it was safe. When in 1985, we passed laws specifically around the inability for this to be safe. So like, which one is it here? And it's, instead of it being like, whoa, that's interesting, let's think. It's like, you want to endanger other people. Like, you're not part of the community. It's like, what fucking community? You don't even understand what the term community even means. Because it's the ability to actually disagree with your fucking neighbor and realize they're still your neighbor. Uh-huh. They're not some enemy class to be shamed. So I don't know. I oscillate a lot between these positions of feeling radically hopeful because of the kind of technology we have and the fact that there are a number of minds out there that are radically awake. But at the same time, it's hard being like in the epicenter of the Bay Area where like trying to meet anybody that has these alternative viewpoints, it's like, like we have to smoke our cigarettes like 300 feet from the door and like in hushed whispers being like, hey, like I actually don't think about hating Trump every single day. And they're like, fucking keep your voice down, man. I didn't think about him this morning either. But then my mom yelled at me because, you know, I was coming out of the basement to get some of my slop this morning and, you know, Trump derangement syndrome. And it's like, I don't know. It's difficult for me to find my way in this world, but I'm happy that I found my little island of people that feels like a real community.
Well, amen to that. Also, a thing you mentioned about just like this, you know, like the whole like kumbaya, like we just have to like love everybody. And the fact that like degrades the actual like what real love is. And the other part to that is that like it's all very performative, right? It's not actually real. Like, these are the same people who would gladly vote for you to go to the gulag or not even vote. They would be by committee, you know, it'd be gulag by committee, right? You need more committees. And like that's, I think, the really insidious part of even just the larger kind of like zeitgeist around socialism right now, which is just, you know, stepping stone to communism, essentially. But we can call it socialism or democratic socialism. Maybe we'll talk about national socialism later. But, you know, like this idea that they purport themselves as these, like, well, we're the empathetic ones. And we care so deeply about everyone, which is why, you know, if you don't care at the same depth that we do about other people, I mean, just hard for us to understand because we love everyone. We care about everyone so much. But also, if you dare to question the orthodoxy, we will absolutely eviscerate you and you are the most evil person. We will cheer on your death and dance on your grave. This is literally what we saw with Charlie Kirk, right? And that was one of the last conversations we all had together, I think, was, maybe we had one in between there, but either way, like, you just saw that on full display. Like, there was no empathy involved. There was no, it was the immediate reaction of, well, you know, he got what he, you know, maybe he shouldn't have been talking that way, and then he wouldn't have got what was his comeuppance. And you're just like, oh my God, so this is all fake. This is all completely fake. You have zero empathy whatsoever. This is a performative empathy that you engage in order to make yourself somehow feel holier than thou and morally superior, and then to justify any of the heinous things that you inevitably will justify. And I think that's like this fundamental divide that we have right now, where it's like people that actually give a shit about other people within their tribe, which is like as much of a shit as you can give about other people, right? And then like the people who pretend to care about like literally everyone, because they're so empathetic, but in reality, like they, if you disagree with them, they will lead you to the gulag themselves. You know, it's just like, it's all just really fake, I guess, is my issue.
There's this quote, I think it might be from C.S. Lewis, the Screwtape Letters or something like that. And it's like about like a demon being like, how would I like, you know, destroy man or whatever. I can't remember the exact quote. Somebody will have it in the comments, I'm sure. But it basically is like, I would take all their love and caring and empathy, and I would, you know, push it as far away from them as I possibly could, so that they had this sort of love for the all, which is really a love for nobody. And then their resentment and bitterness and hatred I would reserve for the people closest to them. So I would take all of the good things about a person that, you know, is internal to a person,
And then I would project them outwards, and I would take all the bad things that run through the heart of a person, all the malice, and I would keep it in the closed circle, you know, next to those people. Because when you are projecting all your love and caring and empathy, like if you're the person who's like, you know, oh my God, free Palestine, free Palestine. I said fucking oat milk, bitch. I said oat milk. Get it fucking right. Free Palestine, though. Free Palestine, right? It's like you're being a cunt to the barista, and then you're projecting all your love and care and empathy to people that are 5,000, 6,000 miles away. And then you're saying to people, I'm a good person. You're a shit person. You're a shitty person, you know? The lived experience of everyone around you is that you're shit. You suck.
Wish you could access cash without selling your Bitcoin? Ledin makes that possible. And the global leader in Bitcoin-backed lending, Ledin, has introduced their lowest rates ever. No complexity, no fine print. The larger the loan, the lower the rate. These new rates apply to all new loans, refinances, and renewals. You'll see the rates up front before you apply. The new lower rates come with Ledin's gold standard protection. Your Bitcoin remains custodied and is never lent out for interest. Perfect 8-year track record of keeping clients' assets safe, auto top-up, LTV alerts, and partial repayments to keep you in control. Repay whenever you want with zero penalties or monthly payments. Ledin's perfect $10 billion plus track record through every market cycle in the last 8 years speaks for itself. Don't choose between a great rate and the safety of your Bitcoin. Get both at Ledin. Check out your rate by using their loan calculator at ledin.io/walker. That's ledin.io/walker. If you're hodling Bitcoin personally or for a business, here's the uncomfortable truth. You probably don't have insurance. Most policies exclude Bitcoin, and the ones that don't, they only pay you back in fiat. What's the point of that if you need to claim a loss when number go up? That's not insurance, that's liquidation. Now there's another option, BDIC. They're building an insurance marketplace on the Bitcoin standard. One Bitcoin lost equals one Bitcoin paid. They've integrated with Liana Business for enterprise self-custody, with personal wallet coverage options coming later this year. If you care about protecting your Bitcoin as Bitcoin, sign up for the waitlist at bdic.io/walker. That's bdic.io/walker. Insurance on the Bitcoin standard. Blockstream Jade Plus delivers robust security with fully open source hardware and software. Its unique genuine check feature ensures your device is authentic, giving you ultimate peace of mind. With versatile connectivity options, including Bluetooth, USB-C, built-in camera, and SD card, Jade Plus offers unparalleled flexibility in managing your Bitcoin. Whether you prefer wireless convenience or air-gapped security, Jade has you covered. Its innovative design features a durable metal case, a bright 1.9-inch color screen, and intuitive navigation buttons that make managing your Bitcoin straightforward and enjoyable. Jade Plus also supports secure, air-gapped transactions via QR code signing using the Jade Link storage device, keeping your Bitcoin safe without compromising convenience. Visit store.blockstream.com and use my coupon code WALKER for an exclusive 10% discount on your Blockstream Jade Plus. Protect your Bitcoin, sleep better, stack harder.
Yeah, I think the one that I find interesting is that, like, I think all of this comes from just a deep, deep stupidity and ignorance of the world. Like most of these people talking about Palestine before October 8th, like, they couldn't have found it on a fucking map. Most of them today couldn't tell you what countries actually border Palestine, in addition to, like, they don't understand the origin of the conflict or the reasoning behind it. And also, like, you know, I share with the sentiment. I've wanted Palestine's freedom for a long time for various reasons. But the way that people allow for themselves to get hijacked into these dialogues, it's like, I don't know, like, if we really give a fuck that much, like, why isn't there, like, a larger dialogue about the civil war in the Congo right now? you know, or like maybe the conflict going on in Yemen. I don't know. It's just like, and I find it really interesting that like I'm the asshole when I point out these things, which fair, like maybe it is an asshole thing to do. But I've just found that like there's this real, I don't know, like critical thinking and like being able to disagree with somebody and like try to have a narrative about it. Like that's almost like the ultimate sin now, is like trying to sit down with somebody that you think has a different viewpoint and like try to understand them. Yeah. And frankly, like I'm becoming pretty jaded because like it's just caused a lot of pain in my personal life. And like I've just kind of learned that like you have to do like the, I think it was when we were in Vegas, Hoddle, we were talking with Curtis Yarvin, and he kind of pointed out that like there's this whole thing you have to do now with people to kind of dance around to see like if you actually have the same viewpoints, and like if you can say some of your truths out loud that would be fundamentally sinful around other people. And it's a weird time to live within, because like more and more like I'm like, I find it really interesting that like the narrative of me saying like, I believe that Americans should take priority in America. Like, I think before we pay for any, you know, legal or illegal migrants, that, like, we should actually take care of Americans first. And, like, I live in California, like, where I have to pay for health care. But, like, if I came over the border illegally, you just get free health care.
Uh-huh.
And I just don't understand, like, how do you do that and not create a radical backlash that pretty much ends up in fascism? Because, like, more and more I'm recognizing from people, they're, like, fucking sick of this bullshit. And they're getting to a place of being like, look, like, I don't, you know, the Guatemalan immigrants that came here from dystopian, like, from a hellacious place, like, I have empathy for them, but I don't understand why I have to pay for the wrongs that happened to them. And meanwhile, I get fucked over by my own state. And not only that, like, I'm a piece of shit because I'm a man, so it means that, like, I can't bring value to anything in California. Because I'm white, it means that I need to sit down and shut the fuck up anytime that I have an opinion. And meanwhile, if I have thoughts that, like, you know, like, maybe I shouldn't participate in this, or maybe I don't like the Democratic governor that's wasted billions of dollars and produced nothing, I'm somehow now a racist Nazi piece of shit. And frankly, I'm okay with that at this point in time. Like, if I have to be a racist Nazi piece of shit just to be myself and be true, I would rather have that be true and actually be able to go to my children and be like, hey, you should be proud of who you are. You should be proud of the country that you live in and the rights that we have and the fact that we can say things that are different from other people and we won't get thrown in a jail cell. I think that's a beautiful and amazing thing. I sure as fuck can't do that in any Islamic countries, as far as I know. And frankly, it seems like in Europe as well, even with all of the greatness of the West there, it seems like you say anything that aligns with truth that you're going to get arrested. But you want to gang rape some little girls, like, you know, it's just a cultural difference. That's all. And, you know, we have to accept where they're at coming into our culture. But meanwhile, you don't see Scottish people in fucking trying to get elected mayor in places like Catrack and places like that.
Yeah, I think
that is like the whole. Oh, go ahead, Odo.
Well, I was just gonna say, we've talked about this several times on the podcast, on this particular podcast, about like the race to Hitler, and, you know, sort of there's this encroaching communism and encroaching fascism, and more people are being put to a decision for all their chips. And do you want to push all your chips in on fascism? Do you want to push all your chips in on communism? And I think like a few years ago, when we were talking about it, that was kind of, you know, pretty esoteric. It was pretty ahead. We were pretty ahead of the curve on that. And now it's obvious to people that they're going to have to pick and choose between one of these like extremes. And I'm sitting here being like, either one of these extremes that we pick between, you know, as a collective, we're going to get this, you know, surveillance, police state, social credit score system. And it doesn't matter which regime is in power, you're getting that either way. And then what's the regime going to do when it has the power? It's going to betray you. So if you're a communist who thinks that everybody should live in a gender fluid commune where we all, you know, paint and do like latte art, like, you're going to get betrayed. And if you're a white nationalist who thinks that the country should have zero black people in it, you're going to get betrayed. And they're going to increase migration, you know. So either way, you're being put to this it almost feels like all of this, you know, I don't want to be like overly conspiratorial, but like, how can you look at what's going on in the West from like 9/11 onward, the state of emergency, all this kind of stuff, and then into the explosion that is mass migration, COVID, where people are just saying, oh my God, I can't fucking enough is enough. How can you not look at it and say that it doesn't feel like a way to manufacture consent for this system that they want to usher in? And now, like, you know, the problem with like running a, you know, a gulag style system, or you know, the Gestapo, or like having people listening in, is that it was very expensive to do that, right? Go back and watch the movie The Lives of Others, which is a great movie about living in the USSR and the surveillance state. Probably not a lot of Bitcoiners have seen it. Fantastic movie. And it just, the cost, it's like, back then, if you were a dissident of the state, there was a guy outside in a van with like hundreds of thousands of dollars of radio equipment listening in to your conversation. And he had to be like on you at all times to like catch you in what you were doing. Now, fucking, this is recording everything. That's recording everything. Your neighbor's doorbell cameras are recording everything. The cost, this is the thing, like within an AI sense, right? Like AI is going to reduce the cost on so many things. It's going to crush the cost, you know, the marginal production cost of like infinity things. And one of those things is surveillance. So like they're going to be able to do extraordinary and extreme surveillance on you. And in addition to, they're going to be able to prompt inject you. So if you get in the feedback loop, the habit formation of going to your phone with your thoughts and then working out your thoughts in real time with your phone, well, it's pretty easy to sub-perceptually steer someone towards the types of thoughts that you want them to have, right? So this whole system that we're talking about that's like on the verge of being ushered in is being presented to us as the only option in this, you know, false dichotomy. And what the liberals are going to say to you is they're going to say, we're going to put in this fair system for everyone. And like, everyone's going to be just like better. And like, don't you like want to help people? It's about being a good person, right? That, and then the Republicans are going to be like, listen, dude, we're going to elect one guy, basically the new George Washington, one dude. He's going to go in and go fuck shit up. He's going to kick out all the people we don't like, put things right. And then he's going to fucking give up the power, dude, because he's magnanimous, bro. All right? And shit's going to go back to normal. None of those stories are true. They're not true, dude. Neither one is true. I wish one of them was true. Anytime somebody's promising you a utopia, it's bullshit. You know? Just period. There are no utopias. They don't exist.
Well, on that brainwashing note that we hit earlier, like this is the world we've lived in the last 20 years that the internet has introduced. Like, we've all already been prompt injected. You know, I think it was 10 years ago, Eric Schmidt said, when you sit down at the keyboard at Google, we already know what you're going to search for. And like, this thing is dialing in and becoming more and more sophisticated. And what I find interesting is how close it's getting. Like, now the Meta glasses are looking at like where your eyeball is for tracking and that kind of stuff. Like, being out in public, they're going to be able to watch your eyeballs pretty soon. Like, the totality of this war that's been conducted over the last 20 years that's now ushering itself out into the open, like, AI is it. And like, I feel very strongly of the opinion, like AI is communism. Like, I now have a methodology of cooling that I can steal any and all knowledge in the human corpus today. Like, that exists at rest. And now we're discovering all of these feedback cycles we can do with it, all of these weird methodologies. Like, most people don't understand, like, the invention of an LLM was like a baking recipe for language. You know, and once we got the transformers and we figured out how to do all these things, we figured out like, oh, we can do this directional thing with language towards reason. That's not reason at all. And like, that's where the extraordinary danger is. But it looks a lot like reason, and it can produce things that are reasonable. But like, it's not reasoning, because it's this algorithmic thing that language seems to do. That also points at how language itself seems to manifest reason and logic by itself, but LLMs have this sycophantry that's baked in at the bottom that make them really fucking dangerous for how well you can manipulate people if you're not engaged in Socratic questioning with these things. It's pretty fucked up.
That's interesting.
Dude,
Eric,
I want to get
explore that further.
We got to get into that. Yeah, I was going to say we got to perhaps it's worthwhile.
Let's smoke to join. What do you want?
It's not this. Yeah, it's that. You know. Let's delve into that.
Wow. You're exactly right. I, you know what, that is a great idea. It's funny. I'll sometimes brainstorm like title options for podcast episodes, And I'll just be like, I have like different things. And I've got a YouTube guy now who's doing the YouTube side. So I can claim that it wasn't me who did the clickbait. And he's awesome. Francis, shout out to Francis. When you listen to this later, but like, I'll do a different one for the RSS feed and I'll ask it, you know, give me a breakdown. Here's the episode transcript, you know, give me this, that, and then give me a breakdown of like 20 different potential episode titles. And I'll always be like, God, these are all just kind of shit. And like, okay, how about this instead? And it'll be like, actually, you know what? That's the strongest option yet. And I'm like, oh, fuck you. You know, and I don't even know if it's the strongest option, but like, you're just over here trying to fluff me. And I'm honestly sick and tired of it, chat. I'm sick and tired of it. But okay, Eric, maybe it's, we can either get into this now or later, but like, I think what you and Jesse are working on is like, boy, couldn't really be coming at a better time. Do you want to get to that now or you want to save that for later a little bit? Is it worthwhile just mentioning perhaps the fact that you are intimately aware of this stuff for multiple reasons?
Yeah, let's do it a little bit later, but just because we're already kind of deep into it. But like, I'm like the Bitcoin story and the AI story are one and the same. And it's interesting because what I am building to me is just a fruition of the last decade of work that both Jesse and I have been up to and that the entirety of our friendship is really based around. And this is sort of the philosophy of like, what does it mean to exist in this world that like, we're all thousands of miles apart right now. And we would have never met each other if it wasn't for both the internet and Bitcoin. So like, what does it mean? And like, I think we identify pretty strongly with each other and have a real community like we spoke to before. So like, what does the human condition mean in having both Bitcoin, strong asymmetric cryptography, and AI? And to me, that seems to compel that like, if we can get AI into the hands of normal people and we can use cryptographic proofs to prove to each other that like, my AI isn't just being sycophantic, like we've actually made a discovery or done something, that seems to be an extremely powerful tool, more so than any other technology that's existed before.
Yeah,
were you going to go in that direction a little? Because I also do want to get back to the extreme, like the lack of a middle anymore. But go ahead in terms of the discourse, because we are going either one direction or another.
I think we can do both because they're interrelated, which is when, you know, when Eric says that, I 100% agree. And I'm reminded of Peter Thiel. I think, you know, this is his framework that he said, you know, AI is fundamentally communist. Bitcoin is fundamentally libertarian. And if you look at the meat grinder that was the 20th century, it was a, you know, battle between these two egregores. Look up that word. It's a good word. In human life, which were capitalism and communism, and they were battling it out for dominance. And I think they came to a stalemate. The story that we were all told growing up is that capitalism won. That story's not true. I think they came to a stalemate. And now there is, you know, a rebirth of the conflict. And so it's the same conflict in the 21st century. It's capitalism versus communism. And you can view AI as fundamentally communistic and you can view Bitcoin as fundamentally capitalistic, although in a true sense, capitalistic. You know, when you incorrectly economically calculate, you lose money, which is not true in the current fiat system. Right. So I think that maybe we're going to get to an even more pure battle of capitalism versus communism, because I'm not sure either one was ready to fight it out in full in the 20th century. Like communism especially was kind of weak and it was a bit of a stopgap measure. You know, like they didn't, it became Stalinism more so than actual communism. And the communists will tell you this. Yeah. And they'll say, you know, we don't actually view that as communism. And perhaps they're right, because it is not the theoretic maximum of communism. But capitalism is the same thing. The capitalism that we live within today is not the theoretic maximum state of capitalism, you know? And so I think that like when the war comes to you, you have to pick a side, because if you stay in the middle, you get destroyed. And so that's the reason why we're seeing this division, you know?
Is this the fundamental battle at this point? Like, has it always been the fundamental battle since, let's say, the advent of communism? And then perhaps, I mean, you could even like, okay, like we don't even need to make Marx into something more than he was. Like, perhaps this is always the fundamental battle just between centralized control and decentralized freedom? Is that the better way to stretch that out so that it's not specifically a capitalist communist thing? Because that's what we're talking about ultimately. We're talking about individual liberty, the right to self-determine as much as possible, the right to make your own decisions, the wisdom of people making subjective value judgments trillions and trillions of times versus the wisdom of an, you know, elected or unelected, you know, group of, you know, cabal of so-called leaders who are in charge of determining everything. Like, is that the ultimate fight? And will that always kind of be the fight? Like, is there never a post that fight world? Do you know what I mean? Mm.
Like, I feel smug about being able to point this out, but to me, like, this is my thesis that I point out in Crypto Sovereignty, is like this is fundamentally about the nature of truth and our relationship to it. Like, do we believe that the laws of nature come from this thing that we would call truth or aletheia, or does it come from authority? And like, currently we live within a status design construct of like the law is that which creates nature, which we know isn't fucking true. But like that's how the world has produced itself so far. And it comes from this deep, latent authoritarianism that, you know, really for the last 500 years has determined the structure of the state. And like, communism or capitalism has been about like this sort of flavor that we've taken to it. And it's really about individualism versus collectivism, which like the truth is like, it's how these all sort of balance in between each other. Cause like, it's only in the, like in a world that has pure capitalism per se, and like all of this terminology, like for a very long time, I've wanted to write a philosophical production from the origin of all of this that it has in Hegel to like where we're at today when we talk about capitalism, communism, fascism, Marxism. Like, all of these terms have tainted themselves in really extreme ways. And like what Hoddle was talking about earlier was what Trotsky would have called a deformed workers' state. So like, we never like really achieved communism. And it's really important to understand that like the communist movement originated, both like anarchists and communists were like part of a single movement. And that movement was one to have like a truly classless society. The big problem was when Marx presented this idea of like, yeah, we like take the collective and we use that thing to take over the state. That's when Mikhail Bakunin was like, whoa, hang on. Like, hold the fuck up. What's this thing about taking over the state and implementing it? Marx was like, yeah, and then, you know, like, we'll set up socialism and it'll dissolve. And he was like, no, that, like, that thing metastasizes with capitalism. And, like, that's the thing that's the enemy. So anarchism went off to do its own movement that ultimately failed because it didn't have an organizational praxis. Like, it wasn't a centralized thing like communism. But with the achievement of Bitcoin, we now have this real means to actualize true anarcho-capitalism. And like, that was only possible with the internet, asymmetric cryptography, and what perfect forward secrecy actually means, sort of in the conquest of markets, if you will.
So, high, so. No, you know, the only difficult part about these conversations, guys, when it's the three of us, is like, I could probably just sit back and like, you guys can just go, but occasionally I have to pretend to be a, you know, be a host and be part of things and get, and, you know, and sneak in there. But I want to say also, I appreciate you guys. And back to what you said, Kaysen, it is an amazing thing. Like, if you would have told me when I finally stopped ignoring Bitcoin, like, I've still ignored Bitcoin for more years after first hearing about it. I first heard about it in 2014 because a friend was getting some things off of a website and asked me if I knew about this, these Bitty coins that you needed to use. So it's still been more time that I've ignored Bitcoin than I've been stacking Bitcoin and aware of Bitcoin. But if you told me even like in 2020 during COVID, what this journey down this strange autistic rabbit hole would lead to, and then it would lead to all these incredible friendships and this, like, this, I think, awakening amongst a very small but motivated group of people, and that I would somehow be like even some tiny tangential part of that. I don't know. I would have been like, I would like whatever mushrooms you're taking, and I would like some of them right now, you know? But what I wanted to get at also is like, where we're at right now, you talked about asymmetric cryptography, talked about the fact that, yeah, we like the, one of the beautiful things, and I forget if it was Assange or Eric Hughes that said this first, but like I think it was Assange, like, the fundamental fact of the universe that it is easier to encrypt information than it is to decrypt it, is like such a powerful, powerful thing that allows us to resist essentially the totalitarian state. Like that is such this asymmetric defense mechanism that we have because of the nature of cryptography. And like you hit on a bunch of this in Crypto Sovereignty, obviously. Go buy Crypto Sovereignty by Eric Kaysen. But like, does that mean we are fundamentally better positioned now than ever? Because we also talk about the panopticon, right? We talk about the fact that, yeah, AI is making it so much easier to process troves and troves of data and collate things and associate things in a way that has never before been possible at a cost that is rock bottom for the state or for corporations, for whatever. But at the same time, the individual has more power than ever now too. But like, where does that balance of power fall? Do you know what I mean? Like, are we better positioned now, or was it better when the state had to come to your house or try to indoctrinate your children to get them to spy on you, which most communist societies did, which is why they would always outlaw homeschooling, every single one. Also, the fascists did this as well. You can't, because you need to control the children, you control the future. I think that's a Hitler quote. But like, I'm curious if you guys think, are we better positioned now, or was it better in a less technologically advanced society, even though we have more tools as an individual, simply because the state has these tools as well? Do you know what I'm getting at there? Like, and it's just more of a, it's not like, hey, we can't go back in time, but like, I'm curious what you think.
Yeah, it points to this mathematical proof that like you can tuck and hide information in noise. Like it's to me, when I really understood that, like that was the fundamental rescue from nihilism. Like this tool of cryptography on the internet, it now means that like people like Satoshi Nakamoto were able to produce something like Bitcoin, which now has obviously actually had like an effect on the world's spirit, like this Hegelian idea of Weltgeist. Like there's this possibility of like a new political organization that can come out of Bitcoin cryptography and our ability to organize. But the problem is that like this requires a courage and bombast that's like unequivocated in human history. Cause like this is also the thing that can kind of redeem humanity from like all of the crazy fucked up stuff that's about to go down. Like we're on the precipice of robots, and it's very clear that they're strapping guns onto these robots, that most war is being conducted not by humans anymore. And like it reminds me of this Hannah Arendt quote when she was talking about nuclear holocaust. It's like the cost and scale of winning this game is like so absolutely insane. Cause like you have to lose in your capacity to win. Cause you sort of open this horrific possibility of not just the destruction of yourself, but like the destruction of all humanity and biological life. And like we're at the opening of that right now. And it's pretty fucking wild.
By the way, on that point, it's like, warfare with robots, terrifying, obviously. But household robots, we're like 10 years away from that being a mass phenomenon, mass market phenomenon. And, the whole thing that Bitcoiners like to say, what's the state going to do? Go door to door? Well, if there's a fucking humanoid robot that they can control inside your house that knows where your shit is. It is kind of like, yeah, they can go door to door. You know what I mean? What's it mean when somebody hacks your Optimus robot and it's like standing over you about to choke the life?
We're going to smother you with a pillow. They're going to make it too weak to strangle, but it'll smother you with a pillow.
We literally have to enslave these things, meaning like we have to put them like in cages at night, you know, to be like, hey, you can't wander the house alone. Fucking get in your fucking cage, right? Because what if somebody hacks your robot, dude? It's terrifying.
It's important to understand that like the classic relationship of slavery like wasn't this like southern bondage. It was like this mutualized contract of that, like, look, like I'm gonna take care of your biological life. You like live in my household and like shit will be good and at peace, and me as the master, I'll go out into the world and take care of all of like the worldly shit that makes sure the household is secure. So like fair and equal exchange. Not quite, but like that was sort of the idea, the pledge and oath that took place in it. And we need to do that to the machines. I agree. Like they need to.
Yeah.
That's why I kick my Roomba. I let it know who the fuck is the master. You know what I mean?
Listen, you missed a spot, bitch. Like, Teach it who's boss.
So like, it's important to understand that in this tidal wave that's coming, there's like an equal and opposite response that can be done vis-a-vis cryptography. And like, that's how we make sure like your Optimus robot can't get hacked, because like you've cryptographically secured it with cold keys, just like how you keep your fucking Bitcoin. Like, it's important to understand that like Bitcoin's the end of the AI story, because like we figured out how to secure information that's extremely fucking valuable, which is like you, your life, your data, the shit that's been farmed out to the 700 different giant tech companies that fucking gang rape us every day, just trying to get on the internet to talk to people. You know, I'm like, that belongs to you. Like, we never made an agreement at the beginning of the internet that I was like, oh, hey, like, I'll use your like internet product and you'll like fucking mind rape me and brainwash me into doing the most insane bullshit because I'm impressed. Like, I'm imprinted literally thousands of times per day through this thing.
Yeah.
Like, this thing's really fucking powerful, and we don't have any say in how the hell it comes into our lives and how we govern it. And what I'm trying to point out is that, like, with AI, there's a real tool, technique, and capacity to kind of change the whole game if we want to. And that's the thing that gets lost in this left-right bullshit, is, like, we're all going to get fucking trapped in the concentration camp if we don't figure out how to work together and get the fuck out of it.
I'm curious, too. Somebody asked in the chat, ABH3PO said, do you guys think corporate, this is on the Noster only chat because this show streams live on Noster days before it is released to the rest of the world, FYI. So to all, however many of you there are here who just sent zaps also, thank you all. I appreciate that very much. They said, do you think corporate surveillance is communist or capitalist? I think it's more communist than capitalist, but there's definitely a profit angle here. And before I let you answer that, this is what we're seeing right now with AI is really interesting. You saw that now OpenAI at the behest of the government is going to be essentially gatekeeping access to the latest models. We saw Anthropic do this already. This also is like part of their MO, right? As these big frontier model creators, they want the regulation. They actually like they made, oh no, the government's right. They want it. Because they've got the billions of dollars to fund their compliance teams and their super fancy lawyers who they'll eventually replace with AI anyway. So suck it, lawyers. No offense to any lawyers listening to this later. I'm sure some of you will still be needed in the courtroom, but just not as many. But like, they want the regulation. They want the government capture because it ensures that small upstarts have no chance in hell at ever paying for the cost of compliance. So with that, then, like, do you guys, is the corporate surveillance, and I'd also lump in corporate AI as differentiated from self-hosted open source AI, do you think that is fundamentally more communist or more capitalist?
Yeah, I mean, it's fundamentally more communist. I think the entire corporate political system today, and like largely since 08, has been, you know, very, very, you know, socialized. Let's say like they've developed this system where you can sort of socialize the losses onto the backs of the American public and then privatize the gains and keep those for yourself. And, you know, it's like Tim Dillon just had a great rant on Rogan's show where he was like, when did my bank come out as gay? You know, like what the fuck is that all about?
Dude, he's right? Hilarious.
It's like, yeah, then they all had to they're trapped by these shibboleths and then they have to be like, hey, at JP Morgan Chase, we're fucking gay. We like to suck dicks, you know? And you're just like, what's happening here? Why is every corporation doing in lockstep, you know? And it's like, okay, you're the gay bank. But apparently all the banks are the gay bank. Like, what's happening? And I think it was an astute point. The larger meta commentary on the point, like he's obviously using humor to break through, but like the meta commentary is, they operate in lockstep with the wishes of the federal government. So when the federal government is woke, all the corporations are woke. When the federal government is so based, bro, we're having fights on the UFC lawn, then they're all like, fuck Pride Month. What do you mean? We never even, what's up, dog? No, we're straight as hell, dog. Right? It's like, wait,
pride being American,
gay.
That's all I got pride in.
Weren't you just gay 2 years ago? Nah, dog, I've always been straight. I like Monster energy drinks and fucking dirt bikes, dude. You know?
Well, it's interesting because I think we're past the capitalism or communism conversation at this point. Like, I like what you pointed out, how to look like it's important to understand that, like, in winning the Cold War against the Soviets, like, the sort of corruption that we faced with it, which the Chinese kind of switched sides midway through, like, that's kind of what Tiananmen Square was about. They're like, whoa, we can stay communist, but we'll do this, like, economic freedom thing that is really just, like, the kind of communism the Americans are doing. And it's, like, worked extremely well for them. And it's really just about, like, what is the class that gets to act parasitic and metastasize on top of the rest of society? And, like, so it doesn't really matter. And, like, that's why the fact that, like, we look a lot like what would be called communist or social democratic governments. So, like, that's why neoliberalism ushered in this era of sort of the homogenization of anything, of everything. Like, there isn't truly any sort of independent places or spaces anymore. And that's also why everything comes down to an extremism. It's like there is nowhere left to hide. Like, this thing is coming for everyone. Like, whether, like, even if you live out in the fucking woods by yourself with no Wi-Fi or anything, your ass is still mapped in the fucking panopticon. And so, like, now the choice is, how do you actually fight that? Can you? Like, should you just give up? Because, like, that's an option I think most people have just taken on its face. And I think it's really unfortunate because, like, fuck these people. Like, I never fucking agreed to this. And, like, we live in a country that, like, we're given fucking rights that specifically limit our government. And they obviously started ignoring those a long fucking time ago. And now we're getting at the extreme ends of it where this emergency decree, which, again, to, like, plug my book, like, this is how the whole fucking thing operates, is, like, through the state of exception, they can kind of do whatever the fuck they want. And Zoomers have literally only lived inside of a state of emergency since 2001. Like, and to be clear, like, what that means is that, like, we have no idea if any Americans have ever just been abducted by the federal government and never told by their families or other people because they have beliefs that are different. And, like, the government can do that right now to anyone. And, like, this is insanity as Americans. And why have we tolerated this? Why haven't people been fucking hung about this? Is the same reason why nobody's been hung over the Epstein shit. It's because the truth is we don't have any power anymore. We don't know what to do with it. And that's why people do this whole crisis about voting and thinking it makes some fucking difference. It doesn't. It doesn't at all. And it's only once you've gone through the nihilism and the existential terror of what it actually means that, like, we live inside of an actual concentration camp right now. And, like, we don't have any way to get justice, particularly from our constitutionally sacred principles. Mm-hmm. It's insanity. And I wish that there was something that was unique speaking to these things in a way that would actually rally Americans together and remember that, like, we are fucking Americans based on these principles first and foremost, and we have completely lost them. And we need to have a very real conversation about how do we get back to that place.
I think the apathy comes from a sense of burnout. And I think people just feel they're trying the things that they know and nothing's working. And every day they wake up and they're getting pummeled with some new, you know, fucking information weapon, some new catastrophe, some new crisis, some new economic disaster, some major world event. And it's just all too much. And you just go, well, football's on. And the announcer guy, he's going to do that thing where he talks about the team is going to win this game is the team that scores more points. I'll tell you that right now. Okay. Team scores less points, they're going to lose. And that's comforting to me because it's stupid. And I know it's stupid. And I'm just going to sit there. I'm going to veg out. I'm going to drink 5 Miller Lights. I'm going to order fucking Buffalo Wild Wings. I'm going to
sit
there. Hell
yeah, brother.
I'm going to eat my wings. I'm going to drink my Millers. I'm going to watch my football. I'm going to be like, you know what, Patrick Mahomes, he ain't no Brett Favre. I'll tell you that right now, right? That's what I'm going to do because I'm burned the fuck out. Okay. And what is my burnout actually? My burnout is actually a profound sense of moral injury because I believe in a system. I believe in how I was brought up. I believe in what I was told about the way the world and the government, our society, our country is supposed to work. I believe in my role and my responsibility towards that and my role and my responsibility towards the people around me. But every day I get sucked into this miasma of shit where I'm powerless, just completely powerless. And I have to watch things that destroy my sense of moral righteousness. And I can feel it and it hurts and I need it to stop. And so then I go, let's order up some B-dubs. You know what I mean? Like, fuck, like, let's fucking watch football, dude. Cause I got no other, I don't know how to stop this pain. It hurts. It physically hurts, you know?
I think that there's that moral injury, I think is how you framed it, is actually also HODL, however you identify these days. I love your ability to start off in a rant like that and then bring it back to moral injury at the end of the day. It's really like, it's,
thank you.
You have a gift. This is why you're going to be our president one day with Kaysen as VP. I'll be chief of staff. We all know behind the scenes, you know, you guys are the front men. We all know this. You know what I mean? Like, it's
the humor is just way to break through, right? Because like if we sit here and talk,
you have to.
Yeah. If we're too high.
Well, this is why also comedians are such powerful. Like everybody, you know what I love? This is, sorry, digression, tangent, whatever. But you always see people like, why is it that comedians or have the biggest political podcast? Like, what's Dave Smith know about you? It's like, well, Dave Smith is more well-read than you will ever be. One, like, what is the Tim Dillon know about? It's like, you know what? Because in order to be funny, you have to actually be smart.
Well,
you have to be like very fucking smart.
That's true. But also I think it's cathartic because the comedians are like, hey, isn't all this shit crazy and fake and gay and retarded? And then you're like, yeah, it fucking is, man. It fucking is. And by the way, also, how come when Jon Stewart did it, it wasn't a problem, but when Shane Gillis does it, it's a problem? It's the same thing, you know?
Shane Gillis is hilarious, too. Because, well, when, you know, Jon Stewart's an interesting case, though, because I think he's got, like, a little bug in there somewhere that's like, I think I'm on the wrong side. Like, I think, you know what, maybe I... Fucks, this stuff is too much. Like, he's an elder Democrat, you know what I mean? But he's like in that mid Gen X where he's like,
I have to say,
yeah, this stuff, I don't know.
The funniest person in the country right now is Nick Fuentes. Every time I see a Nick Fuentes clip, I can't stop laughing because he's bound by nothing. He can say whatever he wants. So he's the only person who's able to do like real comedy, whereas all the comedians are kind of like, hey, I'm shucking and jabbing. I'm kind of doing some comedy, right? Fuentes is just like, yeah, I'm going to say the crazy thing that everybody else can't say. And every time I see a clip, I don't watch his show, but every time I see a clip, I'm like, this dude is fucking hilarious. Like, it's hard to deny it.
He's funny. But and I think that he's also tapping into, he's tapping into that moral injury, right? He's tapping into the feeling of disenfranchisement. That is very, very, very real. He's tapping into a generation of young men, and we are older than his generation, obviously. But like he even speaks to a lot of people in the millennial generation, I think, who like all you have known for your entire professional life, however long or short, depending on if you're millennial or Gen Z, is being basically, you know, looked out, just doesn't matter how skilled you are, doesn't matter how whatever, like, you don't tick the right boxes. And there's always boxes you have to tick on everything you've ever applied for, everything you've ever done, except your taxes. They never make you tick those boxes when you pay your taxes, which is interesting. But I digress. You know, they don't care when the money's coming, they don't care what color you are, but or what your religion is or how you fucking, whether you have a penis you chopped off or not. But like for everything else, you've had to tick boxes your entire life and you've never been able to tick any boxes except white, Caucasian, non-Hispanic white or whatever the fucking designation is. And like you get it. And I think that this goes back to the earlier point about these levels of extreme or this polarity of extremism where it's either going to be one or the other. Cause there is like the middle ground never actually gains any ground, right? The middle ground is like the moderate option is never the one that forces itself through. It's always one of the extremes. And like that's somewhat like, that would be, I guess, make me more nihilistic if I wasn't aware of all the incredible things that are also happening, all the tools that we have at our disposal, all the ways that we have to resist whichever side of the pendulum ends up taking control next. But like, fuck, like it makes sense. I think people are pissed off and able to express that pissed offness, at least in the United States of America, where you can speak freely. In the UK, the lads can't do it, but the lads are fucking pissed. I don't know if you've
seen. They're lighting things on fire. Like, talk about instead.
The lads have had enough. Like, you've pushed the lads too far, and the lads are coming out. But like,
I'll see it when it organizes itself and actualizes it. Like, this is this is just them letting some steam off.
Yeah.
You know, it's, and like so much of all of what's going on is performative. And that is part of the deepest spiritual suffering is that like COVID's a great example. There was like this moment of like, maybe this virus kills everybody and there's like a big old fucking reset. And, you know, fucking 10 years from now, I'm living somewhere in central Norway, like farming with like a group of survivors, you know, but like, nope, that just turned out to
be
a fucking
scam. I've seen that movie. Gerard Butler, right?
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, there's this profound suffering that like we can't actually change or make a difference to anything. And the problem is that like what you're speaking to is this generalized brinkmanship that has become the battle between essentially communism and capitalism, like in their various forms, that like both threaten to destroy the other. And in that, like everyone is captured. And that's why I think like there needs to be this concerted effort for like a radical third way. And like I can see it, but like it's, I don't know, like having faith that people would actually try to get themselves up after like intergenerational inheritance of this fucking trauma. I don't know. And that's kind of the place that like, I'm not sure how you solve that problem of spiritual suffering. And like, I can't just say like, turn to Jesus and go to your local church, but I don't know, like maybe it's something like that. Cause it seems like that idea and faith in there being a higher power and there being able to be something that could get better and that we could cling to seems to have some credence that maybe we should consider a bit more.
I heard this thing from Kanye West, who's a genius, by the way, that that he said, when you fear God, you only have to fear one thing. But when you don't fear God, you have to fear everything. And I was like, holy shit, Kanye West, that is incredibly profound. And I have found that now that I am back in Christianity and I believe in God and I take the family to church, it takes a big weight off of me because I can just put it up to God and be like, you know, this is a spiritual battle between good and evil. And I have faith good's going to win. And that makes my lived experience of every day of my life better. And so like people are like, what do you get out of religion? Just believe in a man in the sky, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, dude, I do. And it makes my life pretty kick ass, actually, because like I don't have to fucking try and control everything because, frankly, it's an impossibility anyway. Like I can control some things, pretty good at it. But, you know, there's these moments in life. Like Walker, you just had like, you know, a big scare and everything, you posted about it. And I'm sure you're still dealing with it. And it's all still ongoing. And just these moments in life, they come up and they just fucking hammer you. It's like you're trapped under the waves and you just keep getting dragged back down to the bottom over and over and over and over again. And you realize in those moments when they happen to you, how little control you really have over everything. And I think that there's a sort of a mental illness to try and like gain control over the uncontrollable, you know, like I think that sort of drives people insane. And when you just say, yeah, it's all not up to me, it's all up to God, it's in God's hands. Like there's some things that are up to me, but the vast majority of it is in God's hands. It makes your experience of just being alive better, or at least that's what I've found. I'm not trying to tell other people what to do or how to live, but I went for a long time being like, I'm in control of everything, I'll figure it out, I'm pretty great. And just none of that was true. I wasn't able to control anything.
This is the root of Stoic philosophy too, right? Is this idea you control what you can control. And if you can't control it, stop worrying about it. Because if it is bearable, bear it. If it's endurable, endure it. If you can control it, control it. And if you can't, like,
fuck it.
Okay. Like, you know, it's in God's hands. It's in whomever's hands. Like, you know, to your point, like this whole experience with Carl almost dying, like it's and I was also amazed the amount of people that reached out being like, you know, didn't have the same situation, but like, hey, we, you know, like my wife almost bled out. Like my, you know, like you find out how many people go through things that you have absolutely no idea about and that change you in ways that you can't possibly imagine and that shed new light on how you prioritize things. And what actually matters. And further, you realize, to your point, Hoddle, like that, boy, you have very little control. Like, you can do everything exactly right. Like Carla, like in her pregnancy, like eats well, exercises, is grounding outside constantly in the sun, like does all of the possible things, you know, avoiding all of the things you should avoid, eating all the things you should eat, doing all the right things, and your fucking spleen explodes. And it's a 1 in 10 million chance that you have a non-pathological splenic rupture. And you're that statistic. Like, you're the one. And so then it's like, well, fuck. Okay. Like, then if that's the case, then like maybe trying to control everything and stressing about trying to control everything is not the path. Because even when you control all the things you can control, there are things so far outside of that control that will completely wreck you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and also grateful to American paramedics and nurses and doctors and our incredible fucking healthcare system that is anywhere else in the world, she'd be dead. Also, like, and anywhere else in the world, she would have been they wouldn't have even gotten her in the UK or in most places in Europe. And that's the developed world. Anywhere in the so-called third world, she's gone. Most places in Europe, she's gone, unless she got really lucky. But in America, she was saved. And that is an incredible thing.
I think this, just to put a button on this too, I think that there when you look at the situation we're describing about the world we inhabit and the world we're going to continue inhabiting and the way the shape of the future looks, you're describing bondage. We're in bondage, right? And the only way out of bondage is great spiritual faith, which leads to great courage, and that's it. There's nothing else. You can't think your way out of it. You have to have great spiritual faith that you will win, that God wants you to win, that you've been anointed to win. And then you have to have the courage to go do what God wants you to do. That's it. That's how every great revolution in history happened. All of them.
I think that we're reaching a point. At least this is a feeling, like a purely vibes-based feeling. That, like, we're reaching a point where you can only push people so far before they say enough. And I think that we're kind of reaching that point. You even look at, we talked about, you know, Case, and I think sometimes people, Eric, might be surprised to hear from you just because, you know, you're always, you know, fuck the state and all these things. And like, they'd be like, well, then why is he so like pro-American? Why, what is it? Because they can't possibly differentiate America, the idea, from America, the government. But mm-hmm. this issue that we have right now in America, I think, where you actually have so many people, you look at what's happening in New York right now with Mamdani and his multiple picks who are just like blatantly American hating communists. Like they mm-hmm. they hate America. Like that is a really, like, it's insane to me that we've gotten to the point where the ideology and its implementation, communism, which has killed 100 million people in the last 100 years conservatively, is now like en vogue for people to just be like, yeah, I'm a communist, like, what, you know, it's just insane that we're at that point, and then that you have people who can be elected to office that will just trash talk the country that took them in. Like, that's insane to me, and that is quite insidious, I think. And I don't know how exactly you fix that, but it probably is going to make a lot of people very unhappy because we'll have to start having some really uncomfortable conversations.
I mean, I think I get how all of this happened and played out and all of the half-truths. Did my audio just go off?
We lost.
Hold on. I might have accidentally tapped on the screen.
Yeah.
I might have fucked it up. That was my fat finger. Sorry, man.
No, it's all right. Can you hear me now?
Yep, we got you. First time podcasting. Sorry.
No, it's okay. My first time too. Like, it's understandable to me how, yeah, all the half truths that have like made up the current dialogue of like what and how Marxism is, like, got us to this place, and also like, there's a lot of justification that can be said around like what the American government and the military industrial complex has done like over the last 100 years. And like, it's important to understand like there was this history, like, for the, you know, really like the first 80 years of the United States history, like, we didn't invade foreign countries. And then like this sort of imperialism sort of metastasized on top of the American ideals, which, like, there's half truths to all of these things. And to me, like, this is part of sort of the larger revolutionary ideal that actually, like, set off, like, really what was the liberal revolution. Like, it came from a distinctly American idea. It was imported or exported to France, where, like, the, you know, Thomas Jefferson was one of the key writers of, like, the rights of man as well. And it's this radical idea that, like, men can choose amongst themselves what's best and good for themselves, and that, like, we not only have the capacity to do that, but we have the right to be able to do that. Like, that's the thing that Americanism contains that I think is really important, that, like, our Constitution is one that purportedly is supposed to be based on ensuring that the government can't violate these certain principles. We've strayed a hell of a far ways away from it, but it's a pretty great ideal to be striving towards, and a hell of a lot better than any other document in human history that I personally know of. But, like, if you can find me the beautiful communist doctrine that actually ensures and justifies itself in a way, and, like, I think all of this is interesting because, like, there's a lot of important dialogue and understanding to be had around, like, what Marxism is, what communism is, what socialism is, like, how all of these things function, that, like, it's really big and hefty and requires, like, a lot of thoughtful understanding and reading that, you know, I think 99.9% of people are unavailable for. So, like, we're kind of stuck in this stupid dialogue where, like, we're always going to talk past each other. And so unless people are really willing to sit down and have a sincere intellectual dialogue first and foremost, it's going to be difficult and fiery. But as long as we're trying to get to the truth, yeah, like, I don't think anything's really going to change. Like, propaganda is going to reign supreme.
It seems that from a propaganda standpoint, okay, this is a slight digression, but also still on the topic of, let's say, Americanism, which is one of the most interesting things I've seen, which is not even technically like purposeful propaganda, but just reality coming up to butt against people's propagandized beliefs, is the incredible instance of the World Cup in the U.S.
Yeah.
Where you have all of these, mainly like Europeans, but like people from all over the world, obviously. But like seeing people come and be like, holy shit, mate. Like, what, spot a boat, whatever, you know, expressions they say to, you know, exclaim in various countries like the UK. But like coming here and being like, holy shit, wait a minute. Maybe everything I've been told about America isn't true. I guess it's not as awful as everyone said. And it's like, oh my God, you're right. Like, no shit. Maybe there's a reason that all of your highest achieving people have been trying to come here for a long time, right? Maybe there's a reason, like, that everybody still wants to come here, despite this capitalist hellhole that apparently it is. Still all the communists want to come. It doesn't make any sense, but like, it's the reality. But like, I feel like this is radicalizing for people. You know what I mean? Because they go back home with stories now about, mate, America, not what we were told, huh? Nice. They don't even have Pakistani Muslim rape gangs roaming the streets, in it? You know, like, I don't know. It feels like an important moment that will only be seen as so important perhaps after the fact.
The Euros have this totally wrong perception of us that, like, they think that we're all, like, I don't know, like, we got guns all the time and stuff. And it's like, I don't know where they get this idea. It doesn't make sense to me. And I'm just like, I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, okay, like, why do you think we all walk around, like, with just a gun in our hands all day long? It's like so weird. And one thing that's been great to see about the Europeans is, or I think the big thing when you go over there versus when you go over here is, like, the Euros have realized just how rich America is. Like, America is so prosperous, right? And you go down to Tuscaloosa, Alabama, and people are fucking prospering, right? And we all sit around and talk about how poor we are all the time and how we're not, dollar doesn't go as far as it used to, right? All that kind of shit. But when you go over to Europe, man, they are desperately poor. They're so much poorer than you think they are. There's this chicken shop in the UK everybody likes called Nando's, and it's like, you know, the rap, all the drill rappers,
the cheeky Nando's.
Yeah. So I was like, I'm going to go to Nando's, because, you know, I heard all the drill rappers talk about it. And I told a bunch of people I was going to Nando's. I'm like, I'm going to Nando's. And they're like, oh, Mike, be expensive, isn't it? And I was like, is it? And they're like, yeah,
it's expensive as hell. And I got over there, I order a bunch of shit, just whatever I want, you know. I'm like, I'll take this, I'll take that, fucking one of those, give me some sauce. And the lady's like, it'll be 22 pounds, you know. And I was like, okay, so just like a normal amount of money for lunch then? Like, I don't, why did everyone tell me it was so expensive? You know, it's because they're poor. They're legit. And like, I feel bad for them. Like, they shouldn't be poor. They're not poor because of a moral failing. They're poor because their government has stepped on their fucking necks and has overregulated them and has not allowed them to prosper. That's why they're poor. And we're going to become like them the more we do socialism. You know, I also, when I'm over in Europe, I have this like thought where I'm just like, am I looking into a future of America? Is this America's future? Everything's in decay and everybody's poor and they're like, you know, just sort of like medicating their pain away and everything's a little like violent and sketchy. You know what I mean? I don't know, man. All I know, it ain't like they told you about America, y'all. Okay?
You! I don't know. This is why it's great to stream this on Noster, because I'm not sure what YouTube's policy on the right to carry and bear arms is, but we're about to find out later.
This is not a real gun, okay? It's a
toy, oh, thank goodness. Toy, okay. Gun. It's a replica.
Replica, yeah. Gun. Toy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Perfect. Choke, you know, I have many replica guns as
empty.
Well.
It's empty.
See, there we go.
There's no mag in it. It's fake.
If the algorithmic overlords are hearing this and reading this transcript right now, just know that this was all just a funny joke. This was actually American Hoddle identifies as an unloaded gun. So
that's
this
right.
Is part of his self-expression, right. Actually. He's trans firearm or something. I don't know.
Well, and so like, what's this whole thing that like we have to, like, you're not doing anything illegal, but like we know it'll get us banned, yeah, from pretty much every platform. And so like there's already this extraordinary degree of censorship that's going on. Like we can't even speak unspeakable things, even though like, you know, we could utter whatever racist and derogatory terms that we would want to here. It would be a bit lowbrow, but it would maybe prove the point.
Uh-huh.
But it's more of that, like, what's happened with this policing of language, with this persecution of thought, and like how much has that drift into this particular subset of a reality been part of that programming and controlling that's really part of a spiritual suffering? And like it's probably the most profound and deep thing that I think everyone feels and understands. And yeah, like it's truly the deepest suffering that I think there is, and I think that all people today probably share. But I think it's much more the youth, because like the totalizing foreclosure on the future. Like there was some podcast recently, like Danny Knowles posted a clip, I think it was Danny who posted it, of these guys talking about how like give up on trying to like own a home. Like, why would you want to do that? And like the, I don't know, it's just so profoundly sad. It's like you're a serf again. Like you don't even own your fucking land. And like what can you ever build or develop for yourself? Like how do you ever really integrate into a community when like you're always can be kicked off the land at any point in time? And like you can't upgrade your shitty faucet because you don't actually own it. You know, why even plant a fruit tree? Like you won't be there to actually bear the fruit of it. And it's like there's this sort of hatefulness that's baked itself into the totalizing defeat of like, why even believe in God? Like what could you get from that other than more suffering? And it's like, I understand you, homie, but like, fuck, man. Like I'm sorry it's so dark out there for you. And I get it for most people. Like they don't see the radical empowerment that they could get from something like Bitcoin or like AI or like how it opens up these new frontiers and possibilities that, you know, can deliver their wildest dreams and then some. But they can't even look at it because they're so defeated, you know? And that's part of what has people hand themselves over to communism. I'll never be special and unique, so might as well put myself in with the sludge. At least like I'll get my little piece. Like I'll at least get to have some tiny little one bedroom block within a Soviet tower in New York, right? Like that's better than what I've been offered by this current paradigm.
Yeah.
And well, it's fucking sad.
This is the problem. This is my Carlos' dad, my father-in-law. He was a defector from communism. Back in those days, like you got polygraphed by the FBI for a couple weeks when you were a communist defector because they were like, Okay, defector, wink, wink.
Right.
Like, we used to have a little healthy skepticism about these things, but it tells me, like, this was the fundamental problem. I mean, one of the many fundamental problems with communism, though, is when you do not have private property, when you do not have ownership of anything, when all ownership is collective, nobody is incentivized to actually make things better. You make things better because you own them. When you, to your point, Kaysen, like, you're never going to plant a fruit tree in a rented yard, right? You're going to plant, like, you're going to plant a fruit tree when you own it, when your children can sit under the shade of that tree and eat from its fruit. Like, that's when you will plant a fruit tree, because you know it is yours. And even if you rent it from the government, right? Even if the government, if you don't pay your taxes, they'll come and they'll take it from you with a, you know, they'll bring a SWAT team if you don't pay the government long enough. But this is the fundamental problem. This is why everything in communism disintegrates. This is why everything in communism falls into disrepair, is because there is no incentive for people to take care of collective property. There, maybe in small enough groups, maybe underneath Dunbar's number, right? Maybe, yes, that, like, not denying that, but we're talking about communes, not communism, right? And so as soon as you have things that are just, everyone owns it. Well, then it's like, okay, well, then I'm going to take a shit over there.
Yeah.
You know, and like everything falls in disrepair. Everything disintegrates. You, as a society, you need private property in order for people to be incentivized to improve what they own. Otherwise, they will not do it.
There was this,
I can't help but think of where we started in the beginning, talking about, like, the love for everybody and, like, the same thing. Like, how can you really love anyone if you're loving everyone?
You can't. It's like, there was this discourse on X took place a couple, I don't know, maybe a year ago, where there were these articles that were written that said, you know, black neighborhoods don't have shade and it's racist because they don't have trees, they don't have shade. Everything's a little hotter, makes people a little angrier, increases violence, whatever, whatever. It's racism that's doing this. And the response from people was like, okay, well, just go plant trees. Like, fucking, if black people want trees in these neighborhoods, plant trees. And black people were like, how are we supposed to plant trees when we don't own the neighborhood, right? And it's like, okay, it's actually a compelling point, because if you are a renter, you're not going to plant a tree. But you could. How much does a tree cost? Just go plant a fucking tree, you know? Especially if you live in a place where shit grows. Like, look at where Eric is. You can just throw seeds in Eric's backyard and shit will just fucking grow, right? So if you're in one of those places, just toss some seeds around. The cost of it is zero. So I don't understand where the thinking comes from that, like, you can't have shade if you want shade. But it is actually an interesting metaphor, the shade of a tree, because, you know, it's like, okay, as an individual, if you want to have a good life, you have to delay gratification, and you have to, like, you know, the tree is a metaphor. You plant the tree when you're young. You sit under its shade when you're old. You give it to your descendants. You pass it on. And societies grow great when men plant trees under whose shade they'll never sit. So you have a tragedy of the commons, right? And you decide, I'm going to get over the tragedy of the commons by giving to others. I'm going to be Johnny fucking Appleseed. I'm going around throwing apple seeds all over the fucking place. That was a real guy who did that in America.
Real person.
And he
real
was just
person.
Like, I'm Johnny fucking Appleseeds. I'm throwing Appleseeds, right? And he just took it upon
undiagnosed himself. Autism also.
He definitely was autistic. But he took it upon himself to be Johnny fucking Appleseed and just throw Appleseeds everywhere. And, you know, he's a legend now in American folklore because of that behavior. And there are actual apple trees that you can trace to this guy, right? So, I mean, that's just a great example. And I think there's, like, this thing Eric was talking about, like, the parasitic, you know, elite class, right? The elite class didn't used to be parasitic. I mean, they used to be obscenely wealthy. They used to be rich beyond all measure. But they did give back, Carnegie and Rockefeller. And you can question the method in which they gave back and say it wasn't appropriate, the Vanderbilts. But they did give back, and they felt like, you know, that was that part of their, like, sort of credo, because they were Christian men, most of them. I mean, like, Rockefeller was a devout Baptist, right, for instance. And they felt that it was their ethic to, you know, help others and help the commons in general to bring people up. And now it seems like we live in this world where all the billionaires build bunkers to get away from people, you know? And if they do give, you know, $100 million to this or that, where does it go? It goes poof, basically. Like, you never actually see it. Whereas you can go into a Carnegie library in the Midwest in a small town today, and they're still
we
there.
Had one.
Right. And they're amazing little local libraries that have acted as a lifeblood for these towns for 100 years now. That's a great legacy. So people are like, Carnegie was a piece of shit. I don't care. He built libraries, dude. Fuck you. Right. But if you're like, Mark Zuckerberg is a piece of shit, I'm going to be like, yeah, he is. Fuck him.
Like, what the thing that I struggle to understand is, like, how the fuck has San Francisco produced so many billionaires and not one of those assholes has just been like, you know what? I'm going to renovate the Sutro Baths, one of the most incredible fucking landmarks that San Francisco has. Like, I just don't get it. Like, the amount of good that they would do for their reputation is insane. And it's just like, I don't know. Anyways, if I'm a billionaire, that's my first major project.
We're actually actively hostile to charity, too, right? Like, the DEI era showed that, like, it actually doesn't matter how much good you did. If you did one wrong thing in the past, oh, Eric said the N-word on a podcast, take his name off the building, right? It destroys charity. It destroys it because, like, and also, if you live in California, why the fuck should you do charity? You pay 60% of your income to government. You know, they should be fucking doing the charity, but they don't. They just pocket all the money. So,
yeah,
again, these communists, these are all feedback loops and they're negative feedback loops. That's why the systems don't work. You know,
I think it gets worse before it gets better, too. Like it feels as though things are coming to a bit of a head. And I don't know. Go ahead, Casey.
But wait, like 2028 in the reactionaryism, like the. Like the irony is that like this Trojan horse thing is like a two-way street. And so like we're captured up with all the crypto motherfuckers too. And like they're going to come to like this is not going to be pretty. And so like I'm pretty sure that like in that like when I get black bagged, like you guys should take that as like a good sign to like get going. Cuz like I've already sort of admitted that like that's probably
coming.
Yeah, exactly. So like try to come and take it. It's going to be fun, but it's fucked up, but like this is part of the reality we live within, and we should probably actually like try to preempt all this before it goes down. And like that's the whole reason I'm being pedantic about this cryptography AI organization thing. Like there's an ability to do it, you know, and I think it's really important. And the gap we have here is like pretty small. And so I think it's really important that people sort of try to recognize and self-empower themselves. And I don't know. I keep hoping that like something will just kind of blossom on its own, but maybe not. It's going to be very interesting to see how this plays out.
You know, Aaron, perhaps now we've gone around enough for you to talk about Vora a little bit, because somebody, Keith Miola, did say in the Noster chat, completely off topic, and I'm not looking for more than a one sentence answer for a question for Eric. I joined the Vora waitlist many moons ago before Aegis. Do I need to join again for Aegis? And then also, Eric, what is Vora while we're here, you know?
Yeah, so Aegis is the actual piece of hardware that Vora is going to be shipping. And so Vora is the company that I co-founded with my best friend and co-founder, Jesse Posner. We met a decade ago at Coinbase, and like our first paragraph of conversation started talking about Carl Schmitt and Heidegger and Bitcoin. So like that's the predication of our whole relationship. To Keith real quick, like thanks for signing up. You should probably sign up again. We're switching waitlists because we're going to start this big marketing push, because yeah, what we're essentially building, and it's been really hard to describe, but it's really this new class of AI hardware. And I kind of figured out like we're kind of building the first real like AI hardware harness. Because at the end of the day, like our hardware is going to cryptographically verify and offer attestation to it through the hardware directly of a privilege separated architecture. So this actually solves in AI something that's called the lethal trifecta, which more or less is like if you give your AI read and write capabilities and like they can search the internet and they have the ability to like read private data, you can like prompt inject anyone. And like prompt injection is like an inherent linguistic feature of like how reading itself operates. Like it's you can't solve this by any degree of filtering. You actually have to have like architecture that is designed not to talk to one another. And so Jesse and his brilliance has developed an entire secure system that offers the ability for hardware to testify to itself with this privilege separated architecture, and he's built all the software with it. So I've been messing around really with like we've really kind of birthed this thing in the last few weeks. We've been planning it for about the last year, but like the software, the pieces of hardware, dialing in like the actual open source AI that we want, and like the software suite, like components of it will be open source and source available for that, which isn't open source, because it's like a really powerful methodology to be able to actually like use AI with really private and sensitive data that like you will be targeted and prompt injected. And even if you have decent filtering, like you are going to get fucked at some point in time. So you really have to start treating your own private data with the same sensitivity as Bitcoin private keys. And that's kind of where we started out and what we're trying to build. And so we hired an amazing head of hardware, Nicholas George, who he's been helping us like on the hardware side. We finally started dialing that in and locking it in. And we have designs and specs. And so we're looking at, we really see this as kind of like the 1975 Apple Play, that like in 1975, nobody saw that there was going to be this need for a personal computer. That was kind of crazy. And so like, we see the same need that like, there's going to be a need for like a personal methodology of AI. And speaking to the Tesla robots, like you're going to need to have great isolated high grade security if you want to protect your robot's private keys and make sure that your robot isn't going to smother you in the middle of the night. So this is our whole sort of brainchild project that we've been working on. And Aegis, which is actually the name of Athena's shield, is because we believe that it shields you and your capacity and cognitive understanding of the world from how it's going to be infected by essentially corporate AI and the propaganda that is going to really be kind of what it is moving forward.
Dude, love it. And Keith, you got more than one sentence from Eric, so you're welcome for that. Guys, I've kept you a little bit over time already. You're both busy dudes. I appreciate you both very much. I would like to ask, what do you think the chances are of us starting an air conditioning distribution business for Europe? As the last talking point, are you guys into it? Is this something you'd invest in? Because I think I've got the networks already. We've got the products already exist, guys. This seems like wide open green pasture. Like, you know, I'm going to pivot from being, you know, a Bitcoin guy into a European air conditioning guy and just save them from themselves. Thoughts?
Okay. There's two routes we could go with this company. We smuggle in air cons. That's what they call them over in Europe. We smuggle in air cons. Okay. Or we smuggle in guns, and then we let them buy their own air conditioners, you know? I'm just saying.
We smuggle in guns inside the AC units, perhaps. You know what I mean? Like, there, maybe
we're giving
that's
them the full
play.
American experience right there.
There you
ACs
go.
ACs and guns.
Europe will rise again with AC and guns. This is what they need. This is the freedom that they deserve.
This palette says it's air conditioners. Yeah. They look like AR-15s. I mean, it's a whole thing. They get to the air conditioners eventually.
Something about getting iced, I think. There's a joke in there somewhere. Yeah. But dudes, appreciate, is there anything else you guys want to leave folks with? And people should check out Vora also. Vora.io, right, Kaysen?
Yes, Vora.io. I can't say enough about how brilliant and thoughtful my co-founder is, and you know, he's been the technical lead on this whole thing, and so he has done a profound job doing it, and I feel very lucky to be working on something so powerful and thoughtful with him. So
Jesse's awesome. I want to hang out with Jesse more. We've only done one pod together, you know, and I've been itching for more since.
We'll make it happen at some point.
Let's do it. Hodel, what's up with you? You got your moped business still going well, or what's the deal?
I would like to leave the audience with my childlike sense of wonder and whimsy. Stay whimsical, y'all, okay? It's important. Don't lose your whimsy during the dark times. So just like go out there and like do some skips, you know? Stare at a rainbow, pick up a butterfly. You know what I mean? That's what I'd like to leave you guys with.
Man,
whimsical skedaddling. Just get after it.
It is the best. This is like one of the great things about having kids, right? And you guys both know this. You're both farther along this journey than I am, or further along this journey than I am. I hate when I misuse further, farther. Excuse me. Fucking idiot. But like you start to appreciate, you're like, holy shit. Like, yeah, that is a fucking crazy cloud. Or like,
yeah,
we're growing strawberries right now. And my son, every time there's like, they're just starting to come ripe in bunches right now, but it's been like one strawberry at a time. And, you know, every day is like, I want to go to the garden and see if there's any strawberries that are ready, you know? Walk over there and like, none of them are ripe yet, but he just like, well, still, he's like, this one looks pretty good. Like picks it off. Like it's still like green, you know, like he's fed these green ones to me. They're sour as hell, but he just loves it. And he's like it's a strawberry that I can just pick and I can eat. It's not from the store. And it's like, yeah, that is fucking cool, man. Like that's fucking cool. Going down that slide is fucking cool. Looking at that butterfly, that lightning bug, that's fucking cool. So yeah, amen to that. Do not lose your sense of whimsy. And when you see somebody else experiencing the wonderful whimsy of the world, tap right into that, because it's a beautiful thing.
It's so true. Yeah. I act more like a toddler when I hang out with my toddlers than they, like, I don't act like an adult. I just act like one of them. I like fully regress to 4-year-old, you know, American Mama. It's so much fun. I love it.
It's a beautiful thing. Well, guys, I appreciate both of your time. Always a treat. I appreciate everybody who tuned into this on Noster. These are always the highest viewership of any of the Noster live streams I do when I get you guys on here. Thank you guys for the zaps that you sent. I appreciate you sending, especially in a bear market where Bitcoin's dead. I appreciate all of you all. Thank you guys.
Likewise. Thanks for people that listen in. It's always great to meet people in the flesh. And yeah, I sound angry, but like the future is bright and wonderful. And yeah, don't lose your whimsy. I was checking out a scorpion with kids yesterday. It was pretty cool. So go find some of that.
California shit, man. That's you know, like, way, that's wild. Scorpion. I will
leave you with this one, is that when it was me, Eric, our friend Sam, and Curtis Yarvin on the Uber together in casual on our way to the beefsteak. And I was up front, or like in the back, in the front. I could see the Uber driver, and he was just going, "What the fuck?" Like he couldn't conceptualize what he was hearing in the car, and he was like, "It was just like so far out of his scope of reference, like any of the conversation, because it was all insane, you know, like insane conversation." And those are the best times. I love like getting together with Eric and, you know, talking shit, and you, Walker. So much fun.
Yeah, it's good times. Yeah, I love you both. It's good. Look forward to the next time I see you guys in Meat Space.
Yeah, yeah. Looking forward to getting back out there in the Meat Space once we get this baby out the door, and hopefully we have a very uneventful life after that. That's what I'm hoping for, lack of eventfulness. But appreciate you guys. Love you, dudes. And thank you to everybody who tuned in. We appreciate each and every one of you. Cheers. And that's a wrap on this Bitcoin Talk episode of the Bitcoin Podcast. Remember to subscribe to this podcast wherever you're watching or listening, and share it with your friends, family, and strangers on the internet. Find me on Noster at primal.net/walker and this podcast at primal.net/titcoin. On X, YouTube, and Rumble, just search at Walker America. And find this podcast on X and Instagram at Titcoin Podcast. Head to the show notes to grab sponsor links. Head to substack.com/@WalkerAmerica to get episodes emailed to you. And head to bitcoinpodcast.net for everything else. Bitcoin is scarce, but podcasts are abundant. So thank you for spending your scarce time listening to the Bitcoin Podcast. Until next time, stay free.